This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here this week with my colleague and co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan, how are you doing?
Hey, Rabia. I am doing fantastic. Did you catch the game on Sunday, by any chance?
You know what? I caught the important parts of it. I did not watch the whole thing, but yay, Team USA.
Yeah, and even bigger news, there was a poll done showing 2020 matchups and how Trump would do against potential opponents. And it turns out that if Megan Rapinoe is on the ballot, she wins 42-41.
I love it. Oh, I hope he saw that poll. I saw the clip of her being asked again if she would go to the White House, and she's like, I'm not going to the fucking White House.
Well, Trump did invite them on Twitter, but he seems to have rescinded that anyway.
He kind of forgot about it. Now he's like, we're thinking about it. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he had done that a couple weeks ago. He's like, well, whether they win or lose, I'm going to invite them. And now he's like, well, we're considering it, but haven't made a decision. So
yeah, it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. If it happens, they won't go. So that's the end of that. But yep, it was fantastic. Also, because I'm not a sports person. It's not a matter of not being like into women's sports or men's sports. I don't watch a lot of sports. So I just recently became aware of the lawsuit and the pay disparities and all that stuff. And that sucks. So hopefully that gets handled in the right way. So yeah, that was great. And that was especially great coming on the... coming after a really awful 4th of July didn't make me feel great about being an American. I don't know what you did on the 4th.
I sat inside and did not walk down the street to Trump's 4th of July thing.
Well, but I will say this, though. A friend of mine told me she went to the waterfront to catch a firework. She said they were some of the most impressive fireworks she'd seen in D.C. on the 4th of July. So I guess he got some great donations lined up for the fireworks show. So good on that.
Yeah. Well, apparently those, I guess it's not going to be anything because that's how things roll now. But the fact that there were two firework companies that donated like almost $1 million for the fireworks is problematic, given that they're also lobbying for tariffs on Chinese fireworks to be dropped. And they were. I feel like that should be raising some ethical concerns, say the very least. But I've not heard any more about it since then.
Right, because, it's got to get in line behind, the 8,000 other ethical concerns we have around this administration. But, it was, Trump got his, you're absolutely right. I think what happened was the Pentagon was like, we got to shut this guy up about this military parade. Give him what he wants for this, and hopefully it'll satisfy his desperate need for, validation as the commander-in-chief of this military.
And it also used taxpayer dollars to do a massive campaign video for Trump, complete with fireworks and fancy planes.
Right. All the flyovers.
The Lincoln Memorial, yeah.
The speech was pretty much just, for those of you who deliberately missed it, I'm guessing, Susan, you didn't watch it, but I don't know.
I did watch it. I did.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, it was just, he kind of went through one by one the different branches of the military and their histories, and one very notable part was when he talked about how we saved the airport from the British.
So in how case we rammed the man parts and stormed the airports.
Were they man parts or ramparts? I don't even know.
Well, the speech itself was totally appropriate. Somewhat surprisingly, it was the tone of it was, presidentially appropriate for the situation. It was not a good speech and it was not well delivered, but those are separate criticisms. The big fear was that he'd make a, political rally out of it. And instead, he just got a pretty backdrop for his campaign.
Yeah. It is true that he didn't politicize anything, which must have been so difficult. But that's because he was on the teleprompter the entire time. I just want to play that one clip for our listeners in case they missed it.
The Continental Army suffered a bitter winter of Valley Forge, found glory across the waters of the Delaware, and seized victory from Cornwallis of Yorktown. Our army manned the airports. It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do. And at Fort McHenry, under the rocket's red glare, it had nothing but victory. And when dawn came, their star-spangled banner waved defiant.
Yeah, so that was kind of confusing to folks. He later, when he was asked about it, he said, well, there was rain on the teleprompter. I don't know what that means. I mean, I guess he's made up the airports part, but, you know, that made it Trump, right? Like, he had to do something like that just to own that otherwise fairly decently written speech. Although, I mean, look, it was all just a bunch of soaring rhetoric and bullshit. You know,
it was all a bunch of Wikipedia facts about the various military branches.
Exactly, exactly. And then somebody went and changed the Wikipedia page to include the airport part on it. Anyway, I also wanted to check in and make sure you're doing okay, because there was some crazy-ass flooding in D.C. last couple of days.
There was. It was nuts.
I was out of town and I was watching like video. I was like, what is happening? I was like, God, I hope. I mean, I'm not far from DC. I'm like 6 miles out of DC and we have kind of low lying land where we are. So I was worried, but it didn't get to you, did it?
I had some tomato plants get squashed. I think they might recover. I'm hopeful. And then I had some planters like overfill with water and put dirt everywhere. But aside from those tragedies, I think we'll recover. Rest in peace, lost tomatoes.
I think your tomatoes will recover. Those are pretty hardy. They're the one vegetables that
I can't
kill.
Tomatoes that got smashed are not going to, but, you know, they didn't go buy some from the grocery store instead.
Well, the White House basement did flood. There was flooding outside the EPA, Constitution Avenue, in the suburbs, Maryland suburbs. I don't know about Virginia suburbs, but there was definitely a lot of flooding in the Potomac area. It was kind of shocking. And apparently, you know, this happened a couple of hours before Trump gave his big environment speech, which, by the way, I'm not even sure what prompted that. Was there a reason he was giving that speech?
Yes, he's rolling back environmental protections.
Okay. So he gave a 45-minute speech, and, you know, he, in the audience, he had basically people from think tanks who oppose the science on climate change. He had, like, I think governors and legislators from states with natural with lots of, coal and oil type of states. And then he had energy folks. And here's a few of the things that he talked about. He started off by attacking the Green New Deal. You know, he basically was like, you know, this is going to cost us $100 trillion and do nothing, when the truth is that, like, there's actually no real plan for it. The Green New Deal is just kind of a resolution with some broad goals. He was touting that the U.S. is like number one in access to clean drinking water, and he talked about air quality. On the waterfront, well, we have pretty good water. It's tied. We're tied with like 9 other nations. On the air front, not so much. We actually have worse ozone ratings than the global average, in fact. He talked a little bit about carbon emissions, that they declined more than any other country on Earth. It is kind of true. However, we are, just because we have declined, we actually still produce, like, basically more carbon emissions than every country in the world except for one, and that's China. So that's not good. And then there was a forest fire thing. You know, he almost didn't have to talk about it, but he loves talking about this stuff. And you know,
oh, he had to talk about it. He had to.
He had to.
He could not.
Did he have to?
He could not get through that without touting his experience in cleaning forests.
His experience as an environmental specialist. So let's listen to this.
To the fires in California, and I said, it's also management. It's a lot of things happening, but it's management. You can't have dirty floors. You can't have 20 years of leaves and fallen trees. After the first 17 months, they say the tree is like a piece of tinder. You have to be very careful, so you can't have that. That's why you have so many fires. And I will say this, spoke with the governor of California, spoke with many people, and the process of cleaning is now really taking precedent. A lot of people are looking at forest management. It's a word that people didn't understand last year, and now they're getting it. And you don't have to have any forest fires. It's interesting. I spoke to certain countries, and they said, sir, we're a forest nation. I never thought of a country, well-known countries. We're a forest nation. I never heard of the term forest nation. They live in forests, and they don't have problems. One was telling me that his trees are much more susceptible to fire than what they have in California, but they don't have fires because they manage, they clean, they do what you have to do. There's not so much to burn, and we're going to start doing that. And it's called, remember, management. It's called forest management. So it's a very important term. When I went to California, they sort of scoffed at me for the first 2 weeks and maybe 3 weeks and not so much 4 weeks. And after about 5 weeks, they said, you know, he's right. He's right. So I think you're going to see a lot of good things. It's a lot of area. It's a lot of land, but a lot of tremendous things are happening.
This is something that, like, last year he said the same thing. I don't know if he's talked about management before in the same way, but this is, isn't it like the first time here he hears of, like, he learned something new, he has to frame it like,
I invented it.
I invented it, or the world is hearing it for the first time. Unbelievable. One thing he did not do, though, he actually never mentioned climate change once, not a single time in 45 minutes. So that was his fantastic environmental speech.
Their goal is to simply put it out of the conversation. The environment is something totally separate from, you know, the climate disaster that's impending.
Yeah.
Except it's not, because then we have torrential rainfalls in D.C. that were the greatest one-hour outputs ever recorded.
I mean, we are breaking records around the world. Alaska right now, I mean, has hit...
It's hotter than... It's 90 degrees.
It's 90 degrees in Alaska. There are wildfires, extraordinary melting of ice and snow. It is the hottest June ever recorded in Anchorage. Just like days and days and days of degrees above 80 degrees. It's just... We're breaking records everywhere in all kinds of ways. And it is all completely directly related to warming, global warming. But he will not mention that.
So a friend of mine had a baby a couple months ago, and she's just finally getting her life back to normal, the whole routine thing going down. And she has a wedding coming up, like a week and a half. And she suddenly realized that... she now has much larger breasts than she did before, and none of her clothes fit her, or her bras fit her, because while everything else is supposed to be the same size, those things are not.
Yeah.
So she was panicking, and she's like, what am I going to do? Like, well, rent the runway for the clothes, and for the bra, I know what you need to do. Go to Third Love, because whatever size your new boobies are, they'll have it for you. You're good.
I love it. I love it. You gave her the solution for new boobies.
When life gives you a surprise, new size boobies, go to Third Love.
Although, to be fair, it shouldn't be a surprise. Those things grow the entire pregnancy. But absolutely. That's the thing. I mean, I'm actually like in a constant reevaluation every couple of months. I'm like, I think I'm a different size again. Because my body is changing, because I'm working out and things are looking very different. And every time I'm like, Third Love, I need a couple new Third Love bras. I love the fact that Third Love has more than 70 sizes, half cup sizes, which I really haven't seen anywhere else. And also, I love the fact that I don't have to go to a store to do this. I can just take their Fit Finder quiz online, and I've got the bra that fits me perfectly.
They also have the Fit Finder quiz. You answer a few simple questions and find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Over 12 million women have taken this quiz to date. It's actually fun and takes less than a minute to complete. And did you know that breast shape also matters when finding a good fit? Third Love helps you identify your breast size and shape and find you styles that fit your body.
Who would have thunk? We have different shapes. Amazing. Well, Third Love has a 100% fit guarantee. Every customer can wear their bras for 60 days. That's a lot. Wash it, put it to the test, and if you don't love it, return it. And Third Love will actually wash the bra and donate it to a woman in need, which I think is amazing. I will say this. I've never returned a Third Love bra.
So whatever boobies you have, find your perfect bra at Third Love. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today.
What else been going on? It's been a busy couple days.
It has, and Trump's new war with England is kicking off again.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a redux. I mean, maybe this time we really will save the airports. Or there are airports to be saved. So let's talk a little bit about the story. Apparently what happened was there were some emails that were leaked, I think, to the British press that showed that the British ambassador to the United States, his name is Sir Kim Derrick, he kind of was giving advice to colleagues, and he was saying that, look, when you're dealing with Trump, you got to make your point simple, blunt. He said, direct quote, we don't really believe this administration is going to become substantially more normal or less dysfunctional, less unpredictable, less faction-driven, less diplomatically clumsy and inept. He described Trump as radiating insecurity, and he questioned if the White House would ever look competent. So, you know,
nothing untrue there.
Right. I mean, look, these are private communications in which he's making an assessment as a diplomat of how to deal with this administration, how to work with this president. He's saying keep things simple. He did talk, by the way, in some of those communications about the incredible rivalries and fights inside the White House and all the White House intrigues. So that was interesting. But it really pissed off Trump.
Yeah. Well, the ironic thing is this diplomat is actually on good terms with Trump's staff. Like, there's a close working relationship there. And they spend a lot of time socially together with key personnel in his administration. So this is not some like anti-Trump figure. It is someone who has very closely worked with the Trump administration, has like expressed like good things about them all the time publicly. And of course, we get his true diplomatic views, which is expressed back privately to his home government, showing that he, of course, is not an idiot and recognizes the obvious dysfunction that was going on. Trump didn't like that.
Yeah, Trump has tweeted a couple of times about this now in the last few days. And in both tweets, he points out that he tried to advise Theresa May on how to deal with Brexit. I told her how it should be done. He literally says that. But she decided to go another way, totally screwed it up. Then he goes on to talk about the ambassador. He goes, I don't know the ambassador, but he's not well-liked or well thought of in the U.S. And he said, we will no longer deal with him. He also said in another tweet that he is a wacky guy. He's a very stupid guy. And again, that I'm not going to deal with him. He's like, I love the queen. I'm not dealing with him, and I'm not dealing with this guy.
He singled out the queen for like the one person in England that he's like okay with. She's still great. Everyone else there sucks. Do we know what his conversations with Theresa May about Brexit were? Like, what was his advice to her?
I have no idea. And the thing is, he also, I don't think, has actually articulated what that advice is. He just keeps saying, I told her what to do and she won't do it. You know, in the second tweet, he was like, you know, I told Theresa May how to do that deal. She went her own foolish way, unable to get it done. Now, of course, Theresa May, outgoing government, and even this ambassador, his term is up this fall or winter anyway. So there's going to be a new ambassador. Is he going to hang on until this guy's going to hang on until that change? I don't know. But if Trump has his way, probably not. The UK foreign minister is like, he's like literally going to fly over here and apologize to Ivanka.
Which sounds like shade all on its own. Like, you want to apologize for calling the American government dysfunctional, inept, and a disaster and irregular by apologizing to his nepotistic daughter who's an aide to the White House? Yeah, that seems like shade.
Well, Derek called Trump in his communication. He said, you know, he's thin-skinned. And then Trump goes like on a Twitter rampage, essentially proving his point. I mean, this guy has a long career. He's been a diplomat since 1980. That's a very long time working, you know, in the Foreign Service. And he is clearly not a stupid guy. He's known as a pretty shrewd guy in diplomatic circles. And, you know, I'm guessing these are the kind of communications you expect. I mean, behind the scenes with anybody dealing with any government as they're trying to advise, you know, get a lay of the land, figure out how to deal with them.
Yeah, they're there to evaluate and give honest advice back to the home government, which is exactly what happened.
Well, I mean, yep, the war has begun. Shots are fired.
Yeah. Did any of Trump's tweets, did he ever actually specify why he was mad? The ones I saw, he never actually explained why he didn't like his ambassador. He just said, like, oh, he's a stupid guy.
I mean, we know why. He's a stupid guy because he thinks I'm stupid. That's basically what it's about.
And for Trump, who's like always talking about how foreign governments respect him and how he has great relationships and how, unlike Obama, now the world respects America again. The fact that diplomats are secretly saying he's an inept, dysfunctional, crazy person kind of cuts against that narrative that he wants.
I mean, for Trump, it is maybe the least tolerable thing that, you know, when he's insulted like this, he can deal with people, you know, objecting to policies if he ever actually articulates them. But this kind of thing, oh gosh, he really is. He's very thin-skinned. And so
now, I saw this before he started recording, so I cannot say whether there's any more to it or if it's just conspiracy nonsense. But apparently, the UK is now looking at whether there are Russian agents involved in leaking these cables. Is it an effort to intentionally undermine the U.S.-UK relationship? Maybe. To be determined. But apparently it's one explanation they have right now for how this stuff might have gotten leaked in the first place.
I hadn't seen that at all. That must
be giant caveat in that, though. That's not something I've seen confirmed. It was just one article from the UK.
I mean, this is the age we're living in. It's modern, you know, statecraft and I mean, this is like how, kind of how stuff has always been done.
I mean, it feels like kind of old style statecraft.
Yeah. I mean, modern to the extent that it's like leaking electronic stuff, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Is it really going to undermine? No, all it's going to take is for them
to... It already has undermined the UK-US relationship by causing our president to persona non grata their diplomat.
They're going to... But here's the thing. They can roll that back so easily. They're going to fawn over him. And, I mean, look at how...
Yeah, but that still causes... These things are not costless. That kind of move does cause a lasting strain. And not, it's not going to single-handedly destroy the relationship, but it's also another mark against it.
I mean... I don't think Trump was a big fan anyways. And I don't know to what extent we know that Trump has like literally asked the UK to put Nigel Farage to appoint him to this position. And that wasn't happening. But let's see with the new government what's going to happen when Theresa May's out. That could change everything. That could change everything. It could completely revive his relationship. So, oh, speaking of which, I also saw the other day that and I don't know if this is in response to everything that's happening and Trump repeatedly saying, I told you what to do on Brexit, you didn't listen to me. But I read a report that the UK is sending some envoy to the United States to discuss Brexit with Ivanka.
Ivanka is going to now advise on Brexit?
Girl, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. Okay. Well, she was like deeply involved in that one conversation at the G20. So maybe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so now she's an expert.
Yeah. Mueller is going to be testifying next week, but the attorney general is already, you know, kind of, he's pretty good at this. He gets out in front of it, right? He did this before the report came out. He's like, let me just get out in front of this. Yesterday he went on, I don't know if it was a press conference. I don't know if he was talking about something else, but he was like, this is just going to be a spectacle. There's kind of like nothing to it. We already know what he's going to say. What he's going to say is going to stick to the report, which is probably correct anyways. But Barr is pretty reprehensible because other than what he's just said about Mueller, he's also had some stuff to say about what's going on with the census. So, Susan, why don't you get us up to date on what's happening there?
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago now, the Supreme Court issued, on its final day of the term, issued two rulings have to do with sort of democracy in America these days. And one of them was in the gerrymandering case where the Supreme Court essentially said, gerrymandering might not be ideal, but also we can't do anything to stop it as a court. It's up to the, you know, the states and legislatures to figure out what to do with it. So, you know, gerrymander ahead, do whatever you want, which is going to have huge consequences for 2020, in part because redistricting will happen thanks to the census that's going to be done. So, yeah, that will lock in new districts for the next 10 years. And God knows what kind of crazy ass shapes are going to be now. And God knows what the Democrats are going to do at this point, because the Republicans are going to gerrymander the hell out of everything. And I know there's been some debates in among the state legislatures about whether they should respond in kind. So that was a loss. The same day, though, however, there's also a Supreme Court ruling in the census case, which has to do with whether or not U.S. Commerce Department can add a question for the 2020 census that asks about citizenship. Now, we discussed this whole issue before on an early episode, but as a quick recap, the census question that's being added would nominally be there to help with enforcement of the Voting Rights Act, the idea being that in order to monitor if people are being excluded at the polls, you have to know what the demographics are like in that area. So in order to better track whether or not the voters for a jurisdiction are matching accurately the voting pool in that area, they want to add a question to the census that asks about citizenship, and they can use those stats to tabulate their VRA stuff for the Voting Rights Act. Of course, with the death of a longtime Republican operative and his daughter found his hard drives, which proved that was all bullshit, and the whole point was to scare off people from participating in the census who are either themselves immigrants or related to immigrants and undocumented persons, in order to solidify the power of Republicans and non-Hispanic whites, I believe is how the report put it. The idea is that when the census is taken, when people fill out the form or have people come to the door, people who do have undocumented family members will be more inclined to either not respond at all or to omit people from it the result would be that there's fewer people counted for that area, and that would be reflected in the overall House representative distribution based on population. So what happened was the Supreme Court had a similar split as it did in the gerrymandering case, but this time Roberts flipped. Roberts joined the liberal majority saying that, okay, most of the time we're not going to really look into whether or not the government's reasons for doing something are really what they say they are, or if they have some secret reason behind it instead. But this time we are going to look into it because it was just so blindingly obvious that Wilbur Ross was lying. It is the Wilbur Ross is incompetent rule. If you reach that level of incompetence, Roberts will join liberal majority and block, in this case, the question. So after that happened, at first it seemed like it was kind of over. The government began printing off census forms without the question. And that was in part because in order to get the Supreme Court, in order to have this decision made by the Supreme Court this quickly, the government told the court that the deadline for beginning the printing process was June 30th. That was their drop-dead deadline. They have to be printing by then or the census can't happen. So because of those time constraints, that's why there was an accelerated hearing and why the Supreme Court heard it without having the lower courts first weigh on it as they usually do. Now, given that deadline, it seemed like it doesn't matter. Like, okay, it's too late to fix it, so it doesn't matter now, right? Well, no. Trump woke up one morning and decided to do a tweet.
Yep.
Yeah. So the tweet was, the news reports about the Department of Commerce dropping its quest to put the citizenship question on the census is incorrect, or to say it differently, fake. That's in all caps, by the way. We are absolutely moving forward as we must because of the importance of the answer to this question. Now, the district court judge in the Maryland case about this called for a hearing, and he's like, what the fuck, man?
Right. We talked about this last week. Yep.
Yeah. The poor DOJ attorney shows up and he's like, I got nothing for you. Sorry. I don't know. All I know is a tweet. I know it was you, Your Honor. And the judge gives it like a hard deadline, says, you got to give us, we got to know for sure what's going to happen by 2 o'clock on Friday. No extensions. Well, Friday comes around, and the response is that they're going to find a reason to justify the question on the census. And once they have the reason figured out, they'll notify the court, which is basically, it's the most pretext of pretext you could possibly have. We'll let you know, Your Honor, when we have the pretext we're going to use. I think this could be a pretty big deal and come down to a more crystallized confrontation and more of a crystallized constitutional crisis for an important reason. And that's that Trump, there aren't many occasions in which Trump can have a solid loss. Most times when things don't go Trump's way, he is able to either spin it as actually it was a win for real, guys, promise, or else he's able to say it's a work in progress, like with the wall. Okay, he didn't get the wall, but he didn't lose on the wall. He just hasn't won yet. Or with healthcare. He lost the vote and doesn't like it, and he complains all the time about it and about McCain's vote, but it's not like a done loss. He's still supposedly, allegedly working on it. It's going to be part of his 2020 campaign, he says. This time with the census, it's like one of the few times in his presidency where there is a clear, undeniable way he can lose.
Right. He's cornered, right? I mean, he kind of he has nowhere to go from here.
Yeah. This is a time he cannot spin this away. If the question's not on there, everyone knows he's lost. Everyone knows he's weak. He will have tried to get his way, couldn't get it, and it's nothing you can win later. It's just done for. So because of that, I don't think he's going to back down, which means he's on a collision path with the Supreme Court right now. So over the weekend, the DOJ announced that all the attorneys that were on the case before, all the trial attorneys that were handling it, will be stepping down. It'll now be handed by a different set of attorneys who are from a different division and don't do this kind of work at all.
What happened there? I'm really confused about that. Do you think it's because the administration was, or the White House was like, get rid of these guys?
I don't think it was that necessarily. We don't know yet why it was done, but what seems to be very probable is that those attorneys couldn't work on the case anymore because they personally had factual information.
They knew
and
too
had
much.
Said things about factual events that is now makes it impossible for them to argue what Trump wants them to argue. For instance, the deadline thing. The whole story about why they had to do this thing was that June 30 was a drop-dead deadline. It's not true. It turns out, actually, they have much longer, obviously. And they're going to have to go to court and argue that it's not too late for them to continue to print, to start a new printing process, basically. And the first question the judge is going to have is like, well, counsel, last time you were here, you told me that June 30th was the drop-dead deadline. What changed? This way, at least, you have a little space where you don't have someone for the court saying, actually, Your Honor, I told you something I didn't, that was not true. And then be forced to explain why they either lied or didn't know the truth to the court. So yeah, replacing them all is the only way to really...
But that, I mean, really, is that enough to pull the eyes up? Because a court can be like, this is, it's not like, I'm not asking you individually, I'm asking you as a party, like you're representing the government. You're telling me the government, it's the government that lied when they said that.
It's still a problem. It's still a problem. It's not going to fix the problem. But for those attorneys individually, they could not do it anymore. They personally would have been on the line there like that. This way, at least, it's not going to be a matter of like personal competency, personal integrity, personal ability to practice. The government will still have the same problem. Like, why did you say that wasn't true? But the individual attorneys appearing for the court won't have that issue on their record. So here's the question. What can they do now to go ahead and do this anyway? Well, it looks like Trump's current plan is to make an executive action out of it and to order Commerce to put the question on the census. Now, the question is, what reason will he give for this? He's definitely, well, it seems like he's not going to go with the VRA excuse anymore, which wouldn't work anyway, because everyone knows Trump doesn't care about the VRA in that regard.
And didn't he tweet already, or didn't he make some comments in the last few days about, we got to do it for this reason?
He's very vague about it, but he's given a lot of contradictory, well, it's very clear that whatever Trump's motives are for this, they aren't based on the VRA. For instance, and before the decision came out, like in April, Trump tweeted out that, can you believe the radical left Democrats want to do our new and very important census report without the all-important citizenship question? Report would be meaningless and a waste of billions that it costs to put together. And then he also tweeted, the American people deserve to know who is in this country. Yesterday, the Supreme Court took up the census citizenship question. A really big deal. Make America great again. Okay, now what on earth is Trump thinking here? How is this the census meaningless without this question? And why is this a really big deal to make America great again? Again, it's obviously not the VRA.
Yep.
And here's what Trump said in a meeting with the president of Poland just before the decision came out.
You're talking about the census?
Yes, the census.
Well, I think that, and I'm not overly involved in that, that's really a legal matter, but I think when you have a census and you're not allowed to talk about whether or not somebody's a citizen or not, that doesn't sound so good to me. Can you imagine you send out a census and you're not allowed to say whether or not a person's an American citizen? In Poland, they say they're either Polish or they're not, right? So I don't want to get you into this battle, but...
why not release those documents,
It's ridiculous.
Why not let the American people see those documents?
I think it's totally ridiculous that we would have a census without asking. But the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on it soon. I think when a census goes out, you should find out whether or not, and you have the right to ask whether or not somebody is a citizen of the United States. Okay, yes, ma'am.
And then most recently, after the ruling, in an Oval Office press gaggle, I think it was, Trump gave the following explanation.
I think it's very important to find out if somebody's a citizen as opposed to an illegal. I think that there's a big difference to me between being a citizen of the United States and being an illegal. And, you know, the Democrats want to treat the illegals with health care and with other things better than they treat the citizens of our country.
So first off, that's obviously not the only two options we got here. People aren't either citizens or illegals.
Right.
You can have immigrants who are in the country on visas.
Right. You have permanent residence.
Cards, or permanent residency, yeah. But it does show what Trump is thinking and this whole census issue and why he is so focused on it. Because the question of whether someone is illegal or not, whether or not someone's documented as an immigrant, that's not on the proposed census questions. That would not even be shown by it. All the proposed questions on census ask is about whether or not you're a citizen, or born in Puerto Rico, or when you were naturalized. The whole documented undocumented part's not even on it. So why then does Trump want it on there? Well, part of it, again, goes back to the whole Republican strategy of discouraging, immigrant families from recording themselves accurately in the census, and that would increase Republican power. But it seems like he really thinks that it's important for us to know through the census who is a citizen or who is a documented immigrant or not. And I wonder if anyone's really explained to Trump that it is absolutely against the law for any information in the census be used by other agencies for 70 years after it's collected.
I wonder if that matters to him. I mean,
he does.
I mean, there are so many things that are against the law that this man is like, I don't care. I'm doing it anyways.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that so people are trying to say, well, like the census won't be affected because that data can't be used for enforcement purposes. Well, yeah, but they're seeing Trump right now defy the Supreme Court on their decision. So why should they believe that Trump is not going to defy them again and use that data for other purposes? I mean, it's very reasonable to believe that he might find a way to do it anyway. The way the law is written is seemingly ironclad, and it's not a genuine concern people have yet. But why take that risk if you are either undocumented or have family members that are? And here's, it also goes back to like why this idea that we need to know who's a citizen and who's not for the census, that does not matter. The point of the census is to find out the population. It's not about who's voting age. The House of Representatives is allocated based on just total human population there. And in 2015, a Supreme Court case confirmed that using this total population method is, of course, permissible since that's what originally was contemplated, that we would use the census to find out total numbers of who lived there, not who voted, and then the total population was used to set the districts. Although the court did leave the door open that it didn't have to be that way, and potentially districts could be done based on something else, such as like number of voting age or voting, never forget, people voting rights. But yeah, I mean, think back to like the 3/5 compromise in the Constitution. That was part of the census also counted slaves and then discounted them by 3/5 to figure out what the total representation should be. So yeah, any argument that like you're not supposed to count everyone for the census has no historical basis whatsoever.
Well, it's going to be on the census, isn't it?
I don't know. Like, I think he will ultimately lose on this, and I think it ultimately will not be on the census, but I think he's doing this fight for a few reasons. The first is that the fight itself can help diminish participation in the census. Like, just people knowing about this issue might scare them off from participating, so that could be a bonus. And the other issue is it puts him at war with the courts. It puts him at war with the Supreme Court, and it's a good way for him to, you know, rally his base on this whole idea of he must be in office to appoint better judges and to take down the Obama-appointed judiciary.
And he just tweeted about how important it was. I think today or yesterday, he's tweeted about how important it was for a president to appoint judges. And he's appointed a lot of judges. He's really stocked the courts, the federal court, all the way up.
So I think this is a fight he will continue as far as he can and as publicly as he can. And I think most likely he will, well, I hope he's not going to defy the courts and put it on anyway. But I think he sees value in the battle itself. And also, he just can't take a loss, ever. By continuing the fight, he can also delay his inevitable black and white loss.
You've got the Attorney General of the United States backing him up on this right now. My guess is that they're going to go ahead and give it a shot. Then there'll be lawsuits filed to, like, you know, what's it called? Stop the census, to like an injunction or something. And then it'll be fought out.
Yeah. They're going to give it a shot. But even Barr didn't seem that optimistic in his statements about it. He was like, well, we think we see an alternate path and we're going to try that and see what happens. It was a pretty relatively lukewarm statement from him. He was definitely not going all gung-ho. We're definitely going to win this. Definitely going to happen. They're going to explore a path that they think they see. They might be able to thread the needle on it.
Well, he certainly didn't defer to the Supreme Court and say it's a closed issue. There's that. All right. So what can we expect? Is the printing ongoing? Is it kind of stopped right now? Do you know what's going on right there?
So the printing's still ongoing. They're still printing the census forms without the question. But the thing is that they were lying. That was not the deadline. June 30 was not actually when they have to start printing or they can't do it at all. That was something I told the court in order to get before the court quicker. There's actually evidence that sometime in October is the real drop-dead deadline. And if they get the question you know, okayed before then, they can include it with no loss, and they'll just toss out the other forms they start printing now. So yeah, it is still possible for them to amend the form in time for the census. The only problem is they told the court that it definitely was already too late, and now they have to fix that part.
And lying on a census, is that an offense? Is that a criminal offense?
Yeah, you have to participate, but it's not like you're going to actually get in trouble for it.
Well, let's see. I mean, do you think this is going to be like the big test of a real constitutional crisis, the first one we're going to see?
We've seen many of them. I think if he actually did get an order that says you can't do this and he did it anyway, that would crystallize the conflict in a way that's not been done before. My guess is he probably won't do that, but it's also possible he'll just decide he can't lose ever at all in anything and just says fuck the courts and puts the question on. And then we'll have a real problem in our hands. That's not a problem now, but yeah, I think most likely he'll just milk the fight for as long as he can and it'll slowly sputter out. And in the end, the question won't be there.
That's been one distraction from, I'm sure, something. I don't know. I feel like this could be a bigger story on his mind right now. And that is that his good old pal, Jeffrey Epstein, was arrested yesterday, right? He was arrested yesterday.
On Sunday. He got arrested.
Oh, he was arrested on Sunday, and the FBI raided his home in Manhattan on Sunday. And he's, you know, being charged as a child for sex trafficking. I don't know if he's being charged with, his lawyers are arguing that he is not guilty of the rape of children, basically. But I'm assuming those are part of the charges. I haven't read like the charges or anything. So tell us what's going on here and why this has anything to do with Trump.
Yeah, Jeffrey Epstein is a sign of the plutocratic rot that has infected our country. It's too over the top to be real, and yet it is totally real. He is a billionaire, allegedly. We don't really know for sure, but he definitely has a lot of money. And he is also a child sex trafficker. His background is from Wall Street. He started off as like a teacher at a fancy Manhattan school and then went to, I think, Bear Stearns for a while.
He didn't even graduate from college. How is he a teacher at a fancy school? Yeah, I didn't understand that.
He knows. But in 1981, he left the Wall Street to set up his own firm, J. Epstein & Company, and that he was going to have an exclusive focus of serving billionaires. He would do money management for billionaires only. Now, here's something that was pointed out by a ProPublica journalist on Twitter. This makes no sense because in 1981, there were exactly 13 billionaires in America. So that's an unusual business strategy.
I mean, don't you only need like one of those clients, though? Isn't that enough?
Well, we only know of one client that he has. And for all we know, that's the only client he's ever had. But it's more likely he's had others. We just don't know their names and they're not going to share it. But that was the Victoria's Secret guy. He's a billionaire, Wexner. And he was the main client, at least, for many years. And yeah, I mean, the whole thing is shady as hell. Like, it makes no sense. And there's absolutely something more going on. Maybe that'll come out. Anyway, with this whole issue with first started in 2000, well, it didn't start, but the investigation started in 2005, when a 14-year-old girl's parents called the police and said she had gone over to Epstein's mansion and had been fondled, or she'd been over there, asked to give him a massage, and she had, and he'd fondled her and told her parents, and that was how this whole thing kicked off. So there's like a year-long investigation. They found at least 36 other minor victims who had been roped, gotten involved in this sex trafficking. Basically, what happened is Epstein would either find local girls using his employees and assistants and victims themselves if they got older to recruit other girls to come to the mansion and perform sex services. And he also trafficked women from overseas under the guise of a modeling business. So yeah, after this year-long investigation, there were going to be charges filed. And so yeah, this is when the world's strangest non-prosecution agreement came together. What happened was, although they had 36 victims, minors, that they knew of at the time, in an ongoing investigation that could have found many more, the feds did not prosecute Epstein. Instead, he pled guilty to soliciting prostitution for a state-level offense only, paid a fine, was registered as a sexual predator, and got an 18-month sentence that he served 13 months on. But also, he was in work release. So, like, for 12 hours a day, he left the jail and went to his downtown office in Miami and worked before turning to prison. How this deal came together is now a matter of scrutiny because the prosecutor that was behind all this was Alex Acosta, who is now Trump's
labor secretary.
Yeah, at the Department of Labor. So let's back up. What does this deal actually involve? What we do know is that the prosecutors and Epstein's defense attorneys coordinated at length to arrange for this agreement. They did not notify victims of what was happening. They worked together to keep victims from finding out what was happening. And then they had the non-prosecution agreement that not only gave immunity to Epstein, but also negotiated immunity for all potential co-conspirators.
Which is crazy because none of them were even, like, charged or, I mean, they're just unnamed.
They were named. So there are four women who were named, as including, but not limited to, four women who had participated in the sex trafficking schemes. They were a mix. Some of them were just assistants who were, quote, schedulers. Really, they were recruiters. And some of them were also themselves originally victims, like young teenagers who were brought overseas to be sex slaves for Epstein. And as they aged out of his interest, became recruiters for him instead. However, it's not limited to them. And that's interesting because Epstein's attorney who negotiated this was Dershowitz.
Oh.
Who, interestingly, was also named in a civil suit by a woman saying that Epstein was a close friend and co-conspirator of Epstein. And he participated in sex trafficking. And Epstein was one of the men that Epstein lent her out to for sex. So yeah, Dershowitz may have been one of the co-conspirators that the plea deal he negotiated gave him immunity for. There's also a second alleged Epstein victim who also alleged that Epstein and Dershowitz were in this together for the sex trafficking. That's two different women now. So anyway, this deal came together. Epstein paid a lot of money as a, not a settlement because it's not civil, it's criminal, but he paid money as like a, essentially a civil settlement to the 36 named victims at the time, got his sweetheart deal and a non-prosecution agreement from the feds, and it's all done. Now, the deal still stunk to high heaven. So recently in 2018, the Miami Herald conducted a lengthy and deep investigation into what was really going on with this. It's an amazing series. You should read it all. They found out that there was more cooperation from Epstein involved in things like possibly involved in like the 2008 financial crisis. And he may have given information about various bankers to the police or to the feds as part of that investigation. They also, apparently, Epstein's sex trafficking was also a blackmail enterprise. He would install cameras on his property and record sexual activity between underage girls and prominent men and then keep the videos for criminal purposes like blackmail.
I mean, that when the feds raided his property, they found, I mean, I don't know if that's what's on it, but they did find like discs that are labeled and it seems like it could be so like in a safe. So it might be blackmail material, yeah.
So yeah, well, what does Acosta say about all this? Acosta's, like, his story that he's sticking to is that he had to do this deal because his teen victims weren't cooperating enough. He had 36 victims, and although it's true a couple of them were not participating or were not enthusiastic or that helpful, that was also while they were represented by attorneys that had been paid for by Epstein himself, and he had plenty of victims who were willing to go ahead and give information. So that whole story is not backed up by the evidence. It's led in recent days for calls for his resignation as Trump's labor secretary.
He tweeted about it, right? Didn't he tweet about it this morning saying that there was no evidence there at that time? And I'm so glad that federal prosecutors are now proceeding with the case because now the evidence has emerged.
Yeah, Acosta did do that. And he was trying to, again, blame the victims for why he couldn't prosecute more before when that's just completely contrary to the record. In fact, a 2018 decision and a suit brought by some of the victims found that what Acosta and the other prosecutors did was in violation of the Crime Victims Protection Act because they orchestrated this whole scheme in order to keep it secret from them and not bring attention to the deal. The court in that case found that, quote, particularly problematic was the government's decision to conceal the existence of the NPA, the non-prosecution agreement, and mislead the victims to believe that federal prosecution was still a possibility.
But Susan, why, let me ask you this, why would Acosta do that at that time? Like, what was his interest at the time to protect these people?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's his story is going to be that because his victims were not cooperating, he was unable to pursue the case himself, and this was the best deal he could possibly get given his factual situation as a prosecutor. The problem is, like, there's tons of emails between him and the defense attorneys showing his involvement in arranging for this incredibly lenient deal. One of the emails came after Acosta and Epstein's main defense attorney met for breakfast, and afterwards the defense attorney wrote to Acosta and said, quote, "I also want to thank you for the commitment you made to me during our October 12th meeting, in which you assured me that your office would not contact any of the identified individuals, potential witnesses, or potential civil claimants and their respective counsel in this matter." So yeah, Acosta was getting assurances that he would not notify any of the victims involved of what was happening regarding the NPA, and that he would help bury this, essentially. There's no good reason for it. Like, what the actual reason is, I do not know. But there is no good reason for this.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, like, maybe, you know, after the fact, looking back now, it looks like he's been rewarded with this position for what he did. But there must have been some connection then. I don't understand.
Well, I don't think that would be connected. Because so Trump's first pick for labor was actually some, like, fast food executive that quickly came into controversy. And
that was a guy who apparently beat his wife, right? I mean, one winner after another.
Then suddenly, out of nowhere, Trump pulls the name Acosta. And it's like, he's my new labor guy. They had done no vetting of him beforehand. So who knows how that went down? It's a problem for Trump now that he didn't do the vetting because, well, I say that. Like, it's a problem for him that all this bad PR is coming out. But of course, Pelosi made a statement today saying that, quote, "It's up to the president. It's his cabinet. We have a great deal of work to do here for the good of the American people. We have to focus on that." So she's not going to investigate or impeach Acosta. So really, it's just a PR problem for him. It's not actually going to be, like, a real problem.
Yeah, Pelosi, I just don't understand what's happening. Anyway,
I have no idea. I cannot begin to explain. Just like I cannot explain how Acosta could have ever agreed to that plea deal, I cannot explain why Pelosi was refusing to investigate it. It makes zero sense. Now, the connection to Trump, though, is not just about Acosta and his labor secretary. It's also because Epstein and Trump are buddies, or were buddies. And in fact, in 2002, right before or right during all this stuff was going on, there was an article on Epstein, and Trump was quoted in it. And he said, quote, "Epstein's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life."
Well, the woman who, you know, as a 13-year-old, alleges she was essentially raped by Trump, says that this arrangement was made through Epstein.
Yes. Yes. And one of Epstein's accusers, who's come public since the initial prosecution, Virginia Jeffrey, I'm probably saying that wrong, she was recruited by one of Epstein's recruiters when she was 15 and working at Mar-a-Lago as a towel girl. She's also the one that says that Epstein trafficked her out to Dershowitz. So, yeah, this is, I mean, that statement alone from Trump about a known child sex trafficker should have been the end of his presidency. It wasn't. It won't be now. But it's...
Well, deeply, I mean, I wonder, you know, there's a lot of speculation about who else could be taken down with Epstein because of this. I mean, possibly Dershowitz. Trump, I mean, like, I also read in some reporting that Epstein was trying to model this whole... I mean, he essentially was, he was trafficking these children out, that he's modeling it after Trump's own, like, modeling agency. And I wonder if there's something there, too, if Trump was also involved in trafficking himself directly.
I mean, I don't think anyone should, like, be getting their hopes up that this will somehow be the end of Trump's presidency.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Or Trump directly. That's not going to happen. It's going to be a problem for him, primarily because of Acosta, who needs to resign right now. But yeah, there are some deeply concerning links between Trump's, both his friendship with Epstein and, like, his business involvement and his own modeling agency, which had the same sort of pattern, same sort of structure as Epstein's modeling agency did, in which he brought over foreign girls for modeling illegally in the U.S. For Trump, supposedly, it was just because he wanted to promote modeling, but Epstein's modeling agency was really just a cover for him to traffic the girls. And supposedly he, Epstein, was basing his modeling agency off of Trump's structure. So it is, seems very, 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 very likely that there will be important, powerful people involved in this who will ultimately go down for it. Because we know that Epstein was filming these very powerful, important men raping underage girls. So that presumably is likely to come out. However, at the same time, it's that doesn't mean they're going to be people that we, their household names. Doesn't mean it's going to be people that are directly connected to Trump or in the administration right now. So, I mean, maybe they will be. I mean, Epstein stuff is so weird and so bizarre and awful and crazy that anything's possible. I'm just saying, don't expect that to happen.
But look, Attorney General Barr has said he will not recuse himself from this. So I wonder to what extent stuff might be, you know, I mean, we might not get some information that we would ordinarily get.
So he is partially recused because he used to work for Kirkland & Ellis, and that was the defense attorneys that Epstein had were also from there. So there is a partial recusal to some of the allegations. What we do know is that the New York, so when he was arrested on Sunday, it was part of a New York investigation and New York prosecution, and it was brought by the Public Corruption Unit, not by the Sex Trafficking Unit. So this is being investigated as a public corruption case, which suggests that their interest is not just in sex trafficking, but also how he was able to cover it up and how he was able to get away with it for so many years and which people he bribed to do it.
He bribed or blackmailed? Or both?
Which people he bribed and which he blackmailed, yeah.
Has Trump responded to the calls for Acosta's resignation?
Just today, Trump made a statement in which he said that he felt, quote, very badly for Acosta and that this all happened a very long time ago and that he really wasn't the only one involved in this plea deal.
Has he said anything about Epstein?
Oh, he said that he hasn't been friends with him for like 15 years and he didn't like him then anyway, which is all bullshit. I mean, they were close friends back in the early 2000s. Also, coincidentally, the time period that Trump's given for like when he and Epstein stopped hanging out is around the time all this stuff broke loose from the investigation.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm sure he didn't hang out with Epstein after it became public knowledge that he was a child sex trafficker. But the time he was hanging out with him was when the sex trafficking was going on.
In one of the stories, the reporter spoke to a doorman at one of Epstein's properties. And that guy, the doorman was kind of like joking about it and saying, oh yeah, there's like parties all night. All these beautiful girls come here usually late at night. And I see Trump all the time come here. This is again, back in that time period. So, and you know, I hadn't watched the clip before of, I should find the woman's name. Is her name Katie something? The one who filed a lawsuit against Trump.
Oh, her real name's not been released.
Okay, maybe that's what. Yeah, so the woman who has alleged that he raped her, and I mean, like, the detail where she says the first time he had her, you know, basically having sexual contact was like, you know, he made her wear a glove. I was like, that sounds totally right for this man. So strange. Anyway, but I don't know. I just wonder to what extent. I mean, is this a situation which Trump could just wait and like pardon this guy?
I can't even imagine Trump would try that.
Oh, I can.
I can't. That's too toxic.
Is anything too toxic, really? I mean, there are already people on Twitter arguing it's not really child pornography. It's not really child rape. It's not because they're teenagers. It's not really.
They're 14.
It's not really pedophilia. I mean, like, right. We've already got people arguing that kind of stuff online.
I mean, yes, they always argue that whenever this happens because there's lots of creepy, like, people online suck. But also, I do not see it being, maybe I'm wrong, but, like, I feel pretty strongly that this is not a political move even Trump would make.
If he needs to protect himself and other powerful people and connected to him, maybe.
Well, he can do that without pardoning Epstein. He can do that by controlling the DOJ, controlling how the prosecution goes down.
Maybe. He could. But it doesn't hurt as an incentive. Anyhow, let's see how it goes.
Anyway, whatever happens next, it's a good thing that Epstein has been arrested.
Oh, God. I hope he dies in prison.
Hopefully he is successfully prosecuted for this. So the Miami Herald investigation found 80 victims, 80 confirmed victims of his trafficking.
God. Oh, I'm sure. That's probably a fraction. That's a fraction. Oh, I mean, decades this
yeah.
man has been
no,
doing.
No, this was a very, very, I mean, well-funded, well-manned, and long-term operation. Like, it's exactly the kind of awful conspiracy that you'd like to think couldn't really happen.
Yeah. There's a theory I saw online that essentially said, you know, the blackmail, he used he used whatever the evidence, you know, against these guys to blackmail them into investing into his hedge fund, basically. Like, that was one way to do it so he could get the money without alerting, you know. I mean, he can't just get big old checks.
Yeah, that makes way more sense than anything else about how his business operated, because God knows how he possibly could be a billionaire today, given what we know of his background in this company.
All right. Well, let's see what happens. Okay. Any other news you want to talk about before we sign off this week?
No, that's all for this week, but we'll be back next week. Although I guess we'll be still before Mueller's testimony.
It will, but you know, it's Tuesday, and every day is like a week's worth of news. So a lot's going to happen between now and next week. So yeah. I'm sure
so
we'll
in
be
2 weeks,
fine.
We'll bring you more on Mueller's testimony before the House. But next week, we'll bring you whatever disasters have popped up since then.
All right. All right, Susan. Stay safe from the flooding and the glacial melting and all that good stuff. I will see you in a week. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.